so serious.
All the toys, all the time.
I am the game, and still getting trying to play dude.
You know the rules. This isn't a toy.
But we bought it at the toy store.
We did, but the way I'm using it makes it an adult thing.
Are you ready to play the game?
Yeah! Welcome to the toy department with Matt Kolsky and Derek Madden.
Yeah, yeah.
And we're back. Oh, I always like to do that if I come in hard with a "we're back." It's another edition of the Toy Department. I'm Derek Madden. He is Matt Kolsky. How are you today, sir?
You're on point, Derek. I'm sorry. I decided to do that last night. And just now as I was ready to do it, I realized it was probably a bad idea, but it was too late. I was pot committed.
Well, because your name doesn't go well with tip. You know what
no,
I mean?
So nor does Derek with Fife, really. I mean, we have two syllable names, and we need one syllable name.
Yeah,
names.
Yeah.
And I don't like have a pet name for you that I can go to. So, oh well.
Yeah.
But yeah, all the time. I'm sure you are.
I guess I could have said all the time, Matt.
You could have. Ooh, yeah. No, you blew it. That's a good point.
I guess, but yeah, it's still weird to call you Matt.
Yeah, that is weird, and also it's weird that like I opened the door to this awkward conversation at the very beginning of the podcast.
Like it just creaked open. all right, so we will be talking about Tribe Called Quest, Low End Theory. I promise it'll be slightly more on point than that opening.
See, game. Now you're working with fire.
Yeah.
Cooking with grease.
Back in the days when I was a teenager. Yep. We'll get to that in a minute because we're kind of running through homework. But
did you ever have a pager?
I never had a pager. Never. Never.
Because you really only needed one dude in the group with a pager.
True. I was also old enough that I remember the era when having a cell phone kind of made you a douche. You know what I mean? Where it was like,
totally.
Who is that guy he is with
really
the cell phone?
Really need to communicate with people that badly?
Yeah, exactly. Uh-huh. So I kind of – when you're in that space, you kind of skip over the pager era, I think, right? Because you're too young to really needing to, you know, call anybody like on a page sort of situation. Right. And then by the time I got to college, cell phones were starting to come in. And I think, you know, by the time I was out on my own, I think I had one, and then you go from there.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. We just had the one, like, the one dude in my, like, little crew had the pager so we could figure out where the party was.
The one dude who was dealing the drugs? Or
No, not a drug dealer. Although, drug dealer notably also had pagers. No, my friend who was distinctly not a drug dealer was just sort of became our social coordinator because he could page and be paged. I guess we could all page, but he could be paged.
Yeah.
So it'd be like, yo, just hit Josh up on the pager, and we'll meet up.
It still seems like a pretty crude way to meet up. We do forget.
Completely crude. Ridiculous. You needed to then go find a payphone or someone else's phone to use.
Yeah.
Ridiculous.
I think people – it's underrated now how hard it was to meet and coordinate and actually do stuff, you know. Back in the days,
when I
was a teenager, before I had status and before I had a major, it was impossible. It, the best test of this is if you ever go to a big music festival, a Coachella or something like that, where the service essentially is blocked out, all of the cell phones, and you're trying to coordinate with a group. That was what it was like every day.
Except worse, because we didn't even have half working cell phones where you get a text an hour after you're supposed to.
Yeah, it was awful. Awful. All right, so.
But yes, let's go even further back to the era of mobile DJ parties and talk about sound breaking.
Yeah, clearly, it actually is kind of a nice segue because sound breaking is a PBS show. It's a series of music documentaries about the kind of oral histories of cutting edge stories in music. Now, for homework last week, I assigned an episode called "The World Is Yours," which was about the history of sampling.
And they didn't mention that song. I thought somehow samples from Nas specifically were going to play a part based on the name of the episode, but no.
I don't think there was any Nas mentioned at all, actually.
No, I don't believe he was.
But I do think that is sort of apropos, because I think that something like that was born out of a time when you had a lot more free time, right?
Yeah.
And so the idea of, oh, I'm going to take a record and find the best part and figure out how to cut that over and over again and then make a new song out of it is the kind of thing that only happens when you have time and a certain amount of boredom.
Maybe. I think part of like creativity is always a little bit of time and boredom, right?
Right.
I mean, anytime someone's creating, it's creating out of nothing, essentially, or in this case, like repurposing parts of things that requires some searching just to find.
Don't you think there's less time and boredom in the world now, though, right? The kids have so – like the content faucet is always on for them?
Maybe. Yeah, I do think that's true. And I'm not sure that has a good effect. But I think it might be a little too easy to write it off to like, well, what do you expect from today's kids? They got so many TV shows.
I'm not saying nothing creative. I'm not saying that nothing creative happens.
I know.
At the same time, you know, all these devices, right? I mean, your phone is a more powerful computer than anything we had access to, you know, in 1984, yeah. Right?
So, or in 1994.
Yeah. So maybe they have less time, but they also have better tools in terms of ability to create. I could now create a sample on my phone, probably, if I, you know, had the
But sampling at its on its face, at its base, at its core, whatever you want to say, is a 30-year-old technology.
Yeah.
And so yes, 30-year-old tape, but there are new technologies that create new and interesting ways that I'm sure kids who chose not to watch the entirety of The Simpsons are using their spare time to experiment with. You know, right? Yeah. It's just like a different set of tools with which to experiment. I do think there's a conversation to be had about whether having less capable tools leads to more inventiveness.
Right. Well, I mean, look, you have less time, right? Maybe you have, you know, because there's more things that take up your time than you did 25 years ago, but you're also starting on a giant platform, right? So that you have, you know, now you have Serato, right? So
right.
It's, you know, you can go ahead and create a whole DJ universe in your house. And so that extra, you know, that sort of makes up for the time gap, I guess is what I'm saying. I'm not trying to say kids today aren't creative.
No, I know. But I do think there's something real there as well, just in terms of like having your mom's record player and like a busted down sampling machine that can cut 3 seconds of anything, you reach outside the box a little more.
Yeah, sure.
But getting to the show itself,
because it's great.
It was excellent. It was just so excellent. I tweeted about this. I really get going for anything about the origins of hip hop specifically, but also I just think for being immersed in a sort of creative explosion, the way this sort of hour-long documentary does an incredible job of doing, it's just so exciting to see all the creativity, to see the innovation, to see what people were thinking. And, you know, I think this pertains to obviously what we'll talk about later in the podcast, but the guy who jumped out the most off the screen in that documentary is Q-Tip, just because you forget how early he is getting going in the late 80s. Like, that's still early, early, early hip hop and sampling. And he really experienced the beginning of hip hop and sort of developed his own style out of it that really changed what people considered possible.
Yeah. I mean, Q-Tip was a standout. I also thought the Run DMC guys.
Yeah. DMC was excellent.
Was excellent. And the Dust Brothers as well, I thought.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm going to suggest if we're doing classic albums that maybe we do Paul's Boutique next.
Well, that might be – I think I may have texted you that in the middle of watching it. Like, hearing all the bits and bytes from Paul's Boutique It's that album, and I think the one we're going to talk about later, are just so huge in the art of sampling and in like the creating a template for basically for what has become indie and underground hip hop over the last 20 years.
Yeah. I mean, this was a revelatory experience for me, you know, because at the time that a lot of that music came out, you know, I was playing instruments. I was a bass player. You know, I was very into, I mean, obviously it was one of the most exciting times in the history of rock music as well.
Yeah,
very into what was happening there. And I sort of viewed sampling as stealing and not real music. And, you know, obviously my attitude toward that has changed a lot over time. You know, I hated Depeche Mode too for all those same reasons. Like, oh, it's fake, it's inorganic and blah, 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 blah.
Right. You were a rockist. You were a rockist.
Yeah, I was a rockist before that was such a term was coined. and I've gotten off that corner over the years, but this was revelatory for me because when you just listen to these guys and hear them talk about their process, you understand how much of A, of their heart that they put into it, and B, yeah, how much thought and creativity went into it. Like hearing the RZA, you know, about
he's a genius.
Trying to put together stuff off beat. You know, and things like that, and the design of that, and then the effect of that, it's really powerful stuff. It's such an easy watch too. Like it's a really quick hour that goes
really
by.
Well done, really well done. And as you said, like the format it's done in, which is just this sort of oral history, it's just one of the most interesting things to watch because you're hearing from the principals. And I think you said that exact thing last week when you were sort of previewing this is. Each person that they introduce, I mean, there are some journalists as well, but most of the people that they introduce are like, oh, yeah, he was there too, and look at what he did coming out of that. And just whether it's Q-Tip or the RZA or DMC or Afrika Bambaataa, you get the feeling you don't get the feeling. What's the way of putting this? You understand how deeply they thought about what they were doing from an artistic and musical standpoint.
Yeah. And plus you get to learn stuff like Afrika Bambaataa was like a hardcore drug dealer. I had no idea.
Yeah, I did not know that either. but it makes sense now. Yeah. And learning about the way this sort of musical movement rose out of the late 70s and early 80s And you know, sort of basically, frankly, the black experience in the late 70s and early 80s, which obviously had its pitfalls. So it's a story about not only this musical expressiveness, but also just socially where these dudes are coming from. It did an excellent job of painting the picture.
Are you going to watch more episodes of Soundbreaking?
This is a good question, one that I haven't considered too deeply just yet, but it probably depends more on the subject matter than the show itself.
That's fair. I set a season pass after I watched this, so I watched another one, which was about MTV and the impact of music videos. I enjoyed it. For me, having read the book, I Want My MTV, which does essentially the same thing. It's an oral history of MTV, and it's like 700 pages.
Yeah.
For that, you know, it was a lot of stuff that I kind of already knew. But if you haven't read that book, which I highly recommend, by the way, I know it's 700 pages, but it's a really easy read. You know, 100 of those are David Lee Roth telling stories. You know what I mean? It's still a really well put together show. I'm interested in watching more. The other episode that I haven't gotten to yet is about music formats, you know, CD, tape, vinyl, and the changing from
just
one to the
next.
Just
eyeballing them, the ones that probably interest me are a couple of the earlier ones. There's one called The Human Instrument that's about voice, which would interest me, and then the Going Electric, which just talks about the electric guitar and synthesizers and stuff like that.
Yeah, but it's a powerful show. I don't recommend a lot of things on PBS. I never went in on Downton Abbey or any of that stuff.
No, me neither.
But I'm down with this, so check out Soundbreaking.
Concur. Would agree. Right, highly recommend.
Should we switch it up to Tribe Called Quest?
Yeah.
This is kind of the other homework for the week.
Watching Q-Tip, man, and then digging a little bit into Low End Theory, which is, in our estimation, the best Tribe album. Although, man, I think there are good Tribe albums, but this one really is incredible. And you see that the only writer and producer on every track of this album is one Jonathan Davis, a.k.a. Q-Tip. He is the driving force behind this. He is the – as much as I love Fife and as much as there's some really good guest verses, he's the best rapper on the album. He's the smoothest. He's got the most interesting lyrical content. In short, Q-Tip is a genius. And this, to me, is the album where it goes from, oh man, this is a really cool little rap group, to, oh wow, these guys are onto something different.
It's interesting that you come at it that way, because I had a very different reaction to it. And maybe it's because I started from a place of like, okay, Q-Tip is awesome. Q-Tip is unquestionably the star of Tribe Called Quest. He's what you he's the first thought, right, when you're thinking back to the group. Probably. What really struck me about this record and listening back to it after, you know, not having spent a lot of time with it for a while, is almost the super group aspect of it and the contributions from the other people, particularly Fife. I think Fife holds up, you know, on this record, in that to me, a lot of the most memorable verses really come from Fife. You know,
he has some incredible verses. I mean, it's not — I'm not trying to take anything away from Fife.
Like, Butter is a Fife tour de force. You know what I mean? Like, it's a little, you know, it's, I mean, funny now, like, some Fife's of the first, the women language in retrospect is weird, but the verses themselves are great.
Yeah, the one that jumps to mind is Butter. Just when he's talking about trying to date the girl named Flo.
Yes.
Just like,
and go through all the women he's dated and just like, uh-huh. So good. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. And Fife has this persona that I'm not going to say it's unique, but he kind of holds this corner in hip hop of like braggadocious MC, but also like sort of self-aware in an amusing kind of way.
Yeah. You know, and then microphone check 1, 2. What is this? The 5-foot assassin with the roughneck business? You know, like, so great. Yeah. Scenario.
Well, even Scenario, yeah. The Diddog is first up to bat, and you're just like, all right, I'm in this.
Bring it, Diddog. He's great. You know, the beats across the whole thing are great. And I'm not saying that Q-Tip is not great. He clearly is. But, you know, to me, that was sort of a given. You forget – to me, just how great this record sounds. The beats on it are amazing. You say,
because it really is just coming at it this time as we go back to it, coming at it just with different frames of mind, because we totally agree on everything about the album, but I think because of the new album, I'm having like a Q-tipissance in my life, where I'm just – it's really being driven home again – how incredible and important Q-Tip is to music and to hip hop. And so I was kind of, as much as Fife kills it and the beats, which certainly Alicia Heed Muhammad is a huge part of, are just, again, it's genius stuff. And it's unique
stuff. No, you know, people, I mean, right. Other people use jazz, you know, Gangstar like or whatever, but like, yeah. it just weren't records that sounded like this. There's so many really great and varied cultural references across the whole thing. You know, just easy flowing.
One of the most interesting things I thought was when the content of the lyrics gets into some social or sort of conscious territory, because there is a lot of just talking about how awesome they are and how good at sex they are on this album, which is fine. That's, you know, that's part of the deal. But when they do get into social stuff to frankly, to like street stuff, it's also just such a unique perspective. Like, you know, in 91, there's Dre Day and there's De La, and I'm not sure how much there was in between, if that makes sense. You know, there's Straight Outta Compton.
Well, there was definitely like Conscious. I mean, you know, if you're saying there wasn't that much stuff between Conscious and Gangsta,
that's maybe, what I'm saying.
Yeah, maybe that's true.
And I think
Public Enemy's in that space somewhat. You know,
who is?
If Public Enemy was in that space somewhat in 1991.
Yeah, but they were a little more hard-edged and serious.
Yeah.
That Q-Tip and Fife, in particular, managed to talk about the streets in a way that is not just "I'm out here killing motherfuckers," and also is not, and also doesn't like ignore that stuff in favor of like goofiness and silliness. Now, again, there is some goofiness and silliness, and I think that's one of the biggest differences, that and sort of added texture to the production from People's Instinctive Travels, which is really more, you know, Ham and Eggs is on that album. Like, it's silly for the most part, and it's fun, and the raps are like a game. But here they actually start to say things, and they're saying it from smart, interesting perspectives. When Q-Tip talks about stuff that's happening, it's from like a positivity angle, but it's also like a "here's what I see in the streets" angle, and it all seems to be talking about people and how to make it better for people.
Yeah, I think the other thing that elevates this record to me from really good to classic status is just how tight it is. It's truly an all killer, no filler record. You know, yes. None of the songs are very long. It's such an easy listen. You know, I put it on last night. Like, you know, yeah, I'm watching basketball with the sound off, and I just threw this on, and it's just a fast 45 minutes. You know what I mean? Like, it just boom. You know, and every song is good. There's no one where you're like, you know, get to Sky Page already. You know what I mean? Or, oh, where's the scenario coming on? Like, it doesn't, you just, everyone is like, damn, I remember this song. You know, oh, it's good. So
even on the couple of songs that get up around 4 minutes, it's usually because there's a couple of killer guest verses, but B, they move it right along. I think of – this is going to be a weird analogy for most people, but I think of a comparison I often make between eras of the band Phish. And in the 90s, like I always will say Phish was awesome. But in the 90s, there was a lot of ambient filler, for lack of a better description, when you went and saw a big jam at a Phish show. You know, there were transitions. There were – and I think of it as like skits on a hip-hop album, right? It was like you're going to get these bangers, but there's transitions and there's sort of – it's going to take us a second to get there and it's going to be big and exciting, but like bear with us. There's none of that here. There's no bear with us. It's like the moment a song might be getting stale, it's just like boom, on to the next beat. And that is something that is – easy to philosophize and incredibly difficult to execute. Just to go straight from like Fife rapping about all the ladies he's hooked up with to verses from The Abstract, which is literally just Ron Carter playing the bass, this lady singing, and Q-Tip talking about stuff, like just telling you about the world.
Yep. And that's great.
And then boom, straight into Show Business, which is the Brand Nubian guest track, and is like about the perils of the industry. Like they keep driving at you, and there are no breaks. It's so good,
it's
so hard to find albums like this anytime, but especially I feel like now.
It's really funny to me how differently we view the Prism of Phish, for one. You know, like my memories of Phish are essentially all of the like all of the ambient transitions and none of the bangers.
Yeah.
But also that, like, when you think of Phish, when you think of this record, and I think of In Rainbows, I think of Radiohead. And just like In Rainbows is my favorite Radiohead record, which is a controversial thing.
No, that's not. I don't think it. I don't
Among
think
Radiohead
it
fans,
well,
but what
you
I
know what I know why it's controversial, but I also understand the comparison and why you love it because it's the same. It really is just we have something to convey. We have a thing to get across, and we're determined and focused, and we packaged it perfectly, and like. Nailed it.
There you go.
It's just perfect execution is what it is.
Indeed. All right. So that's great stuff. If you have not done your homework this week and checked out Low End Theory, just do it. Just set aside like, an hour, man. You will not regret it.
You probably already know it. You know, you've probably already listened to it. If not, I don't know. What have you been doing with your life? But even if you have, go back to it because – man, some stuff doesn't stand up, and this almost stands taller in retrospect.
Yeah, couldn't believe how well it held up, honestly, having not visited it for a while.
It's excellent.
All right, so should we move on to should we do Black Mirror?
So here's the thing. We got two video entertainment pieces in Our this week's Black Mirror episode and the film Arrival, both of which will involve spoilers when we talk about them, I think.
Yeah.
So do you want to sneak in your TV thoughts first?
Sure. We can do that. Here are my TV thoughts. It's pretty simple right now. I mean, we've talked a lot about how this is the era of peak TV. It's a golden age of television. There's more content than we know what to do with. And yet the last couple of weeks, and keep in mind that we are in, where I guess we're just coming out of now, a sweeps period for network television. So this is supposed to be, when, a lot of the heavy hitters are rolling out. Mm-hmm. And I'm kind of wondering, where are the great television shows right now? We talked about Insecure. That's now over. A lot of the shows that we were kind of excited about, Atlanta or Better Things over the last couple of months, those are gone. And
to be fair, they're just
gone.
They're just over for the season.
Yeah. I don't mean gone forever. But no, I mean, all of a sudden I'm looking around and if you're like me and you're a little on Westworld, then there's
I think
just
we're
not
all like you, Derek.
No, there are people who are into this. It sort of boggles my mind that people are pot committed on Westworld, I think. A lot like the Showtime shows I kind of enjoy, but they're very pulpy. You're Shameless and you're The Affair. I'm not going to try to pass those off as great television.
Okay.
So where is that? FX feels a little dormant right now. I'm a little lost. Is it a holiday thing? Where's all the peak TV?
I think it's just a holiday thing, right? I mean, I don't know. I don't know for sure. But I think it's just a holiday thing.
It feels...
We get all this stuff. A lot of good stuff is coming back, especially at the start of the year. So I wouldn't freak out too much.
It feels to me like a combination of HBO not being quite at its best, and that's still an important thing. In the era of great prestige television.
Yeah.
And then certain other shows, on their inevitable creative petering downside. Out. Downside. Yeah. What I mean? Like, some people might be excited that Homeland is coming back. I feel like Homeland was over three or four years ago. Some people might be excited about The Walking Dead. You know what I mean? I feel like The Walking Dead creatively has
that exists anymore either.
Petered out. Yeah, you know what I mean? So those are shows that are on.
So two things. Number one, I really do think it's just holidays because I don't have everything off the top of my head, but like there's moderately interesting stuff coming out and some stuff that just eyeballing some upcoming premieres. There's a Matt Damon and Ben Affleck show on Sci-Fi. There's a few new network shows. Decent shows coming back, Girls, stuff like that.
Where are the buzzy Netflix shows right now?
Sherlock is releasing a new a new series in January.
Mm-hmm.
I know it doesn't excite you, but the new Marvel Iron Fist show is coming out in January.
Mm-hmm.
Always Sunny comes back in January. There are things, but I think the other side of this is, I mean, think about what you just said. It sweeps for network TV, which should mean they're throwing their best stuff at us. And I think what we're learning really here is
they don't got any stuff.
They got no stuff. At least not, I mean, not peak TV stuff. I hate to sound like a pretentious douche, but like not stuff that we're going to talk about on a podcast. Stuff that even if you and I squeeze it into our busy TV schedules, it's not stuff that makes us think or want to have a discussion on the level that we're bringing it to the podcast.
I'm
going to watch the final season of Bones because I love
you are
the Deschanel family, and I'll watch almost anything they do.
Okay,
but I watch that while I'm like pretending to practice guitar or cleaning my room or whatever. I don't sit there watching it thinking about it. So when you talk about network content and the stuff that they try to push this time of year, it's just not stuff that's super interesting or exciting.
I do this thing with some friends of mine where we'll bet on sports, and instead of betting cash, we'll bet a half hour or an hour of television time of the winner's choosing.
So you get to make your friends watch bad TV?
Yeah, and then you have to write up a report of the thing that you watch.
Oh, God.
Yeah. So
that's a horrible thing to do to a person.
Yeah, so I lost the Falcons Eagles game a couple weeks ago, and I my losing bet was that I had to watch a half hour of the new Matt LeBlanc show.
God.
Man with a Plan is the name of that show.
By the way, didn't a show called that with Tim Allen come out a few years ago? Or
I don't know, but this could definitely be a Tim Allen show. It's one of those where it's like, you know, I hate my wife, I hate my kids, it's so hard to be a guy, you know, one of those things. And Kevin Nealon is in it, and I just felt bad. I felt bad for everyone involved. Like, why are they still pumping out these kinds of shows? Like, you're
wait,
like,
what did you say the show was called?
It's called Man with a Plan.
Okay, Tim Allen's show was called Last Man Standing.
Yeah, and I believe that's still on.
Almost,
by the way,
exactly the same show.
I think that show is still in the air. Last Man Standing. I could be wrong about
only,
that.
It was 07-08 only. At least.
Oh, really? Okay. but it's a
as befitting. It's oh no, wait, no. That's not true. It started in 07-08. You are correct.
Yeah, thank you.
Sixth season premiered on Friday, September 23rd of 2016.
So, and I think that, you know, these shows exist. Yeah, networks are cranking out these shows for people who still want the old paradigm of, like, you know, multi-camera Wacky Neighbors.
I don't know if you're the same as me. I can't even endure a show with a laugh track anymore.
Laugh tracks, I forgot about laugh tracks. Yeah,
they're awful.
It's
so
really
jarring
hard.
And disturbing. Why did we ever do that?
Because we couldn't figure out a way to do it before, where people, like, they felt like you needed the cues, I guess. I don't know.
That's so crazy to me to need cues.
Yeah. Hey, people watch what they're going to watch, I guess.
Maybe I do need them. Needing them is beside the point to me. I don't want them.
I just don't, and I think – I guess my point about all that and bringing the Matt LeBlanc thing up is that I do, in a certain way, think the networks have stopped trying. And, like, you know, the stuff that's really hitting on network television, like, I guess, like This Is Us – you know what I mean? It's like the high-grade,
right?
Slocky, sort of like high-grade sentimentality. Right, that sort of stuff. CBS procedurals, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
that sort of stuff.
They're trying at a different thing.
Yeah.
They're trying to make money.
And occasionally you get a good wife or, you know, something that has like a dent, you know, Parenthood, I guess, was like that when it was on. Or, you know, certainly Friday Night Lights, which is great. You know, you get sort of high-end, you know, the high middle brow kind of television. And that's the best you're going to hope for from the networks. I feel like Black-ish, a show like Black-ish is kind of in that group. You know what I mean?
Yeah, maybe. I've never watched it. But I do think part of that, again, is just you're really selling to two different groups. And the overlap is small and not worth seeking. You know, I think what what TV executives have figured out is, like, some of us, there's room for some of us on this corner where the goal is to make good art, and there's also room on this other corner where the goal is to make digestible video entertainment, and both exist, but trying to cross the two over is sort of a pointless affair.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know if that's really true. I like to think that people who enjoy The Big Bang Theory could also enjoy something that's better. Although, again, I will probably see almost, if not every episode of The Big Bang Theory just as it airs in the background of my life. Like, I think people who have a weekly appointment with The Big Bang Theory could be entertained by something that's a little deeper and more thoughtful. That's just not what they're presented with. And people are super attached to their various routines.
Sure. And I don't begrudge anybody if that's what you want. If you want digestible entertainment,
however you want.
Yeah. Good on you. You know, and for me, like, I think that's one of the nice things about 2016 is that there's a place for everything. Most things are avoidable now. I don't have that sort of, I think almost all the episodes I've seen of Big Bang Theory have been losing these bets. I don't absorb the Big Bang Theory. I'm aware that it's on 700 times a day, but I don't have to watch any of them. You know, Seinfeld is also on 700 times a day, and I can check in on a Seinfeld when I want to. You know what I mean?
Pretty much whenever you want. Yeah, it's great.
You know, and I don't Simpsons, avail myself thing. Of that a lot, but when I do, I enjoy it, and it's nice to know what's there.
Yeah.
All right, let's move on to maybe the some of the current stuff we've been talking
let's
about.
Spoil
some stuff, because we went to the movies this week. That's one thing that the holiday does afford me an opportunity to do.
That's the other side to this, is like, enjoy this time with a shortage of peak TV by going to the movie theater. I went to the fancy New Mission Alamo Drafthouse Theater last night.
Oh, I hear those are great, the Alamo Drafthouses.
me and the person I was with, like, based on the over-the-top warnings given at the beginning of the experience, probably should have been thrown out of the theater.
Okay.
Because
you were distracting others, is that what you're saying?
Not on purpose, but like, I'm not gonna say there was no drinking involved, all right? And it is a theater that serves a variety of beers, both on draft and out of large bottles, and I believe over the course of the movie we filled out our like order card incorrectly, both by putting the card in the wrong place and by somehow both of us either misspelled or like miswrote down the beers that we wanted. We sent the poor waiter guy back an extra time for glasses of water that we forgot to order the first time.
How bad did you misspell the beers so that they couldn't figure out what your original intent was?
They did, but it's just like he had to ask while there was video playing on the screen. You had to,
was
like,
it like Heineken like, with a Y? Like, what did
like,
you do?
Did you mean the Bear Republic? Because this does not say that.
Okay.
And I don't know how it happened, okay? And then also we spilled at least half of a giant bowl of popcorn all over ourselves in the floor.
Was this during your rampant makeout session, or no?
It was a slippery metal bowl. That was the excuse that was used. I'm not naming names or pointing fingers, except to say that I definitely did not spill the popcorn. Anyway,
okay. All right.
There was by the time we left, there was popcorn everywhere. But he did get a sizable tip for his trouble, so I don't feel too bad about it. But yeah, anyway, New Mission Alamo Drafthouse, it is a good time. Good food, booze, and we saw the movie Arrival.
That was quite a tangent, but I enjoyed every second of it. The Arrival, starring Amy Adams and Renner.
I keep saying The Arrival, but I'm picking.
Is it just Arrival?
It's just Arrival.
Really?
Yes.
All right, fine. Whatever.
The Arrival is a song by the hip-hop group Atmosphere, among other things.
I was going to say, it's probably a lot of things. Atmosphere.
Yeah.
So, yeah, Arrival, starring Amy Adams and Renner. It's a movie sort of about actually,
before we go too deep, before we spoil, because we have to spoil to really have this conversation, can we do like a quick capsule review for people who don't want it spoiled?
Okay, go.
I give this movie two thumbs firmly pointed at one another.
All right.
And I guess the quick and easy things that I would say about it is the acting was tremendous, I thought, and it's really almost just Amy Adams and Jeremy Renner. There's other big names, there's other scenes, but they are the core of the acting of the film, and I thought they were both excellent. And I was entertained and intrigued throughout, and I think I would say I might call this the worst movie I've ever been that entertained and intrigued throughout and then talked about for an hour afterwards.
Interesting. All right. I'm a thumbs up, I would say, on arrival. I'm not an enthusiastic thumbs up. I have some issues that we'll get into when we spoil it, I think. Yeah. But I would say it was good, and I would. Here's the other thing I would say about it is I feel like this is the kind of movie that doesn't get made all that much anymore.
Yeah.
An alien movie that has cool special effects, but they are not entirely dedicated to massive explosions. This is an alien movie in which there is not that shot of some major city, either New York or San Francisco, getting exploded.
Right.
Which I really enjoyed.
I agree with that. I agree with that. And that was part of enjoying it throughout, was like, it's a little more thoughtful than Independence Day.
Yes.
A lot more.
And that's, which is a low bar. Yes. But a bar that Hollywood often fails to reach, I would say. So
I would say almost always fails to reach. Yeah. And so in that respect, they accomplished something here.
And it's not boring. You know what I mean? Because you can do that movie, right? Like Contact I kind of enjoy, but it's a little boring. Yeah.
I think, is more – it's more interesting and a deeper discussion topic than something like Contact. And I think that's to be expected from the crew that made it. I mean, the director, Denis Villeneuve, this is a guy who's known for making interesting and sometimes confusing films. Prisoners and Sicario were his two big ones before this.
I'm looking at his IMDb photo right now, by the way, and he looks exactly like a guy you named Denis Villeneuve. The picture in your head with the scarf. He's wearing a scarf and the whole deal.
Does he have sunglasses too, or no?
He's not. No sunglasses. No sunglasses.
Okay. His Wikipedia photo is like in a pinstripe, but like Kentucky Derby pinstripe, white and dark blue or black suit with sleek sunglasses and like a 5-day stubble.
Yeah, I could see that look. Yeah, I think he's got a 5-day stubble all the time.
Yeah, definitely does. Anyway, you would expect something more thoughtful and deeper thinking than Independence Day when you get this crew of people together. So that's to be expected. And now I think we're going to have to spoil it because this is where we get to the horrifying problems with this film. I think I can broadly address it. Luckily, I talked this out last night to a degree, so my thoughts have been somewhat put together on this. And I think the overarching way I would describe my feeling about this movie is that if you're going to make a film where clearly, expressly, you are expecting and almost asking people to have thoughtful conversations about the movie and the world and the other and, cultural differences on Earth and how that might differ from the culture of an entirely distinct alien species. All these questions that are interesting and require thought and conversation. If you're going to make a film expressly leading to that sort of discussion, having it filled with logical holes is not a great look.
I would almost say to that point, really introducing an element of time travel or massive timelines. Like, you're just – then there is now too much logic required to the point where it's going to detract from the complications of the cultural complications that should inherently be in the story and are interesting enough on its own, certainly in our current climate.
Yes. Because and you know, who knows? Maybe it would have ended differently if it was being made now, after a Trump election. Although maybe I'm being overthinky there. But yes, the cultural implications are fascinating, and that to me is where the discussion is interesting. And what they essentially did is muddle that with what is nothing more than magic. The idea that somehow, understanding the entirety of this alien language, you would cease to be moored in time and begin to live your life unlinearly. It doesn't make any sense. It's bizarre and goofy and functionally senseless.
And it also leads to this reveal, right? That I feel like is intended in almost this kind of sixth sense kind of way.
Right.
Like, oh, the flashbacks were flash forwards the whole time. You know what I mean? It doesn't land, right? Because it's confusing.
I had that halfway through the movie. I was like, this kid has got to be their kid.
Well, you were ahead of me.
And yet, you know, I have a lot of thoughts during movies that were wrong. At one point, I thought the two aliens were like two hands of one giant alien. So
by the way,
not give me too much credit.
How much did the two aliens remind you of Kang and Kodos from The Simpsons? So much for me.
For me, it was Thing from the Addams Family.
Because they look like Kang and Kodos and everything with like the and there were two of them.
No,
and,
totally. But getting back to the what they did at the end, the reveal of it's all flash forwards is I kind of semi expected, but then it's like, well, she solved the whole thing by traveling back and forth along her own timeline, basically.
Right.
And first of all, it's completely unclear and absurd that she suddenly gains that ability at exactly the right time.
And other people are involved in all of that. You know what I mean?
Right. Involved in it's never made clear how she would know where to go in her future to find out the important things she needs to get to convince the Chinese general not to start a world, universal war. Like, there's just for a movie that has so many interesting, thought-provoking things about stuff that pertains to the real world, to go off the rails with like sci-fi magic and a weird time travel twist at the end just to like wrap it up with a bow, to me was pointless.
Yeah.
I would have rather had it just end with all these questions totally open ended.
I agree. The end.
To me, like, that's why I can't give it the thumbs up. Is just like, there is a lot there, and I had a really interesting, hour plus conversation, which is why I haven't slept at all afterwards with the person I saw it with, just talking about like, what does that really mean for time? Like what does that mean to become unmoored in time and all this other stuff, and like, there was a point at which I was like, you know what? I wish this conversation was more about the cultural implications of this movie.
Just the idea of
trying to play out the logistics of this weird thing.
If an alien civilization landed here with the express purpose of helping us, in exchange for helping them, how would we receive that? It's a fascinating question, and I agree. It gets shoved to the side because you were trying to understand the dynamics of time travel and the logistics of how would this work and what has just happened.
Well, and here's the thing about that. Here's the truth of the logistics of an unmoored of someone becoming unmoored on their timeline. It's logically absurd and impossible, and it doesn't hold together for the human brain. Now, I can't speak to whether there are four-dimensional beings that live along a timeline that's infinite and does it, like, who knows? Maybe there are aliens who understand time as
and
a
that their,
spatial dimension.
Their language would somehow be the key to unlocking this.
I don't – that doesn't make any sense to me. But even if I grant you that.
By the way,
let's just talk.
How enjoyable was it that they seemed to speak basically in Sigur Rós album covers?
That's funny. I put that together, but that's totally true.
Yeah. Sorry.
And also, and my friend pointed this out to me. Like, the fact that they just go from like is that, are they saying their name right now to, like, here's a dictionary of their language? They kind of yada yada a little.
They yada yada a lot of that, yeah.
Yeah, I would like, it would have been nice to see how that actually worked, at least to some degree. But getting back to the idea of coming unmoored along your own timeline, it, you have to decide if you're the creator creating this fictional idea of someone becoming unmoored along their own timeline, then you have to basically decide, okay, either this person has lost free will, understanding time in their life and decision making in a way that is totally impossible for the human brain to conceive, because if your decisions matter on a non-linear timeline of life, if your decisions make a difference, then you are constantly always living non-linearly the infinite number of possibilities determined by your choices.
Right, because you can't mess up the things that you've already seen, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that sort of sorry for getting all philosophical, but that, like, a priori disqualifies the very question they're asking about their child.
Yeah.
You know, because they send this message like Jeremy Renner's going to leave her because she, knowing that their child would die tragically in her teenage years of some horrible illness, decides to have the child anyway. Except, does she decide?
Right.
Because if she's living unmoored on that timeline, then no matter what she did, she was always going to end up with a 17-year-old kid dying or whatever age. Like, so either her decisions don't have an impact on that at all, and his getting angry at her for making that decision is absurd and ridiculous and doesn't even make sense, or she's constantly living an infinity of possibilities, which I don't even know how to conceive that. Which
could include saving her, right? Or her not getting the disease somehow.
Which would include her daughter not dying, which means, like, why would she not choose to have – like, it just doesn't – it doesn't hold together.
So this is – and this is what I'm talking about, the problem of time travel as a narrative device. You just can't – like, it's always going to open up these questions. And if you want these questions – it doesn't seem like they set out to make a movie with these questions as the central purpose. So,
exactly.
Yeah.
That is the core of why it does not get, like, a big thumbs up for me. Because truly watching it, it was like an interesting, thought-provoking experience, and I was entertained. Which usually is, like, the vast majority of how I rate a movie. But again, I just thought this movie was so clearly and specifically designed to be a thought provoker that having it end in a way that seemed to provoke the wrong thought is perplexing to me.
Well, yeah, and I gave it a thumbs up.
Not the wrong thought, but just not the most interesting issue.
I gave it a thumbs up because I felt like it was kind of like watching the Ohio State-Michigan game, which was a great game that ended on a terrible call.
Right.
Did
it, though?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, it did.
So you're a Michigan fan.
Technically, it ended on a play after a terrible call, but it ended on a play. It ended because of a terrible call. It ended because the officials didn't have the balls to overturn, a call in the other guy's stadium.
I don't know if I would. I don't know if I agree, but that's beside the point. Either way, the point is an ending.
That's
a mediocre
not satisfying.
Ending did not ruin the whole experience for you.
Exactly. Yeah. And so that's kind of where I'm at. I would say it's honestly less than mediocre ending.
Worse than mediocre. No, I agree.
Ending. But the up to that point was really enjoying the film. So,
And again, now I feel like I should make the point that I only made, as I sort of gave it thumb sideways in the open, which is the acting, the way it looks, like so much about this movie is done so well and looks so good and hits so well. Like the emotional experience of Amy Adams and Jeremy Renner hits really well for me, just with them trying to understand what's happening, with how they react to literally being introduced to completely alien life forms, I thought was really well done and put together.
Yeah, and I want there to be more movies made like this, and I'm wondering if Passengers is going to be one. We'll see. I suspect not. That is oh my God, now I'm blanking on names. This is terrible. The guy from Parks and Rec.
Chris Pratt.
Chris Pratt, thank you. And Jennifer Lawrence.
Yeah, I think I saw a preview for that. Yeah, I'll watch that.
It's, you know, it's two people alone on a spaceship. So we'll see if things go bang bang or if it's a little bit more cerebral. I don't know. But yeah, well, I'll probably wind up checking that out over the holidays as well.
Yeah, well, I think we'll probably do some more movie stuff around the holidays because there are a lot of movies. Have you seen Moonlight?
I have not seen Moonlight yet. I'm hoping to do that as well. I have a tremendous buzz about that movie.
Okay, so. Yeah. Let's not – I don't want to commit to next week, but I think Moonlight in the future.
In the future. I'm not 100% sure of its availability in Minneapolis at the moment. So yeah, I definitely don't want to commit to it at the moment.
I'm not going to make any of the jokes I want to make about that. So
yeah, don't.
Yeah, but I think that is the next highest priority on my list. I did see Doctor Strange, but I do not expect you to, so we don't have to talk about that.
Hey, that's good because I won't. I've heard it's decent. I could see maybe that feels like an airplane movie for me.
It's a Marvel movie.
Yeah.
It's not gonna blow your mind as like, oh, this is so different from all the other Marvel movies. It's a good Marvel movie.
All right, fair enough. I actually DVR'd Deadpool the other day, so I may watch that.
That will blow your mind. Yeah. If you haven't seen it. Have you not seen Deadpool?
No, I haven't seen Deadpool.
Oh, we should talk about that next week. That's one of my favorite movies of the last decade.
All right. Maybe we'll get into Deadpool. Let's real quickly get into Black Mirror.
Yeah.
The episode in question here is episode number 5 of season 3. It's called Men Against Fire. And I'll just quickly say, not one of my favorites. How'd you feel?
Well, to me, this suffered, and I'm starting to worry about the series in general. I'm starting to worry about – because there's another 6 coming, right?
There are another 6, yeah.
I'm starting to worry that – maybe the British approach was the right approach on this because I think we got through – I think there so far of the 5 we've watched, we're probably like 3 for 5 on this new season where we were 6 for 6 on the first 6 in terms of just being excellent. I mean this wasn't like I was pissed I watched it afterwards, but it suffered from the same issue that I think has been around this season in general, which is like a lack of ambiguity in an interesting way. So much of the first 2 seasons, what was interesting was this feeling of being dropped on your ass at the end of it, like, and trying to figure out how to think about what had just happened. This one, the shut up and dance, like, I don't feel like there's a lot of question about how to think. You know what's right and what's wrong when you get to the end. And it was like an interesting story, I guess, in its own right about what was right and what was wrong. But like, it's not like I don't think anyone's watching it and going, yeah, man, that's a pretty good idea, like to turn people that have certain genetic markers into like monsters and then murder them en masse.
No,
like,
but see, I don't think that's the technology point in the story. I think the thing to think about is, you know, if we could create technology that would reduce PTSD or eliminate PTSD or generally shield people from the horrors of war, we'd almost certainly pursue that, right? Because it seems like a great idea that would really help a lot of people. And then what are the consequences? What are the consequences of that? Well, yes, of course. Knowing that, okay, you know, you would dehumanize people and turn people into monsters, you wouldn't do that. But I don't think you would start from the premise of knowing that, right? So, you know, taking the horrors of war away from people, what does that do? Like, that to me is an interesting question.
The only thing the technology does is dehumanize the opposition. That's the great breakthrough.
Well, sort of. I mean,
sort of.
You know, you also kind of plants these fantasies in your head. It makes you forget things, you know, and makes things that are not so great look great. You know, like it's not just turns the people into monsters.
It does that exclusively to get you to kill humans and not think of them as humans. Like, that's the philosophy of the technology. The philosophy of the tech is we must exterminate these genetically deficient people,
okay,
which is horrifying.
Okay, but let's say you could give someone just a pill that made you forget how horrible killing people was. You know, didn't turn other people into monsters or whatever. But, you know, after you killed them, you didn't have the nightmares. You know what I mean? And the whatevers. Like, that's Is that a good thing?
Yes, but that's pretty different from a philosophical basis standpoint. That's pretty different from what we saw.
I guess, but it's I mean, it's not a giant leap in terms of, hey, I'm going to talk about this afterwards to get there. You know what I mean?
I think it is a giant leap, and I can explain to you why. Because to me, the most fundamental difference is whether this is it is achieving engagement by deceit. In other words, it's one thing to engage someone as a soldier for your cause, have them do things that are upsetting to their psyche, and then try to heal their psyche. It's a very different thing to trick someone into your cause, have them do things that would damage their psyche, but they don't know because they're not capable. You make it perceptively impossible for them to understand what they're doing.
Right, but isn't
that very different?
Sure, those are different things, but isn't this a story of, at its core, you know, are the horrors of war necessary for a soldier to endure? Like, shouldn't war be a horrible experience?
Yes, I think that's exactly what it is. And
but not, I don't but think that's a base. I don't know that's an assumption that people share, right?
No, I think, but I don't think it's just the horrible experience thing. I think it's that the moral for me is that it's irresponsible to take the horror out of war, because it would lead you to make inhuman decisions. It's morally irresponsible to take the humanity out of someone in order to facilitate murder. That's what's being done here.
Right, but we do that in all sorts of subtle ways now. I guess, look, here's
subtle ways, but you still have to feel that, and you still have to feel the weight. He says at one point early in the episode, by the way, if you didn't catch spoiler alert before we started talking about this, our apologies, but he says at one point in the beginning of the episode to the crazy woman, don't kill a civilian, you'll have to live with that for the rest of your life. Right? So to me, that's the point, is if you can kill at will without having to live with that for the rest of your life, that creates an irresponsible killing machine.
Sure.
Sure. Like, there's
but I also think it's not a big leap from doing something to help our veterans suffering to then creating a whole bunch of irresponsible killing machines. And that to me is at least interesting territory to think about. You know what I mean?
Yeah, moderately, but I think I see that leap as much bigger than you do.
Yeah, maybe. And that's the thing.
Here's where I lose it, is when they show the video of him agreeing to this in the first place. And I think they sort of showed their ass on this, because the lead character is this even-keeled, you know, unaccented speaking guy as a military man, and then they show him agreeing to it, and he's like talking in slang and in complete sentences, and clearly is like a little out of it, and like seems like he just rolled in off the street and doesn't know what he's agreeing to, and just like, you had to make him an idiot to sign up for this.
Yeah.
And that's kind of my point, is like, I would never sign up for war, but I have to believe, for my own sanity and because I like to believe in the basic decency of humanity, I have to believe that the majority of people who sign up for the military have essentially pure, or if not pure, mostly positive and productive ideas about what they're going off to do, and that if you told them, we are going to blind you to reality in order to make you do what we want without thinking about the moral consequence, I hope most of those people would not sign that paper.
Yeah, we may also have a little bit of a different view of war. But look, you know, to go back to your original point in terms of, you know, whether you're worried about the next six episodes or not, I'm not. I found this to be the least entertaining episode. Definitely, if we're ranking them, I'm putting this one at the bottom of the new season. And yet, to me, I think we just generated a pretty interesting discussion from it. I still think there are interesting ideas, even in the least successful ones. Now, I like Shut Up and Dance more than you did. Obviously, we talked about that when we talked about it.
I like them. You know what it is? One of the things that was most interesting to me about this series were these moral quandaries. And so the episodes where the quandaries are not where like the moral answer is pretty straightforward and not just straightforward because the moral answer to the banging the pig in the first one is straightforward but like almost not particularly worthy of discussion or like not an interesting or irregular moral conclusion. They just appeal to me less.
Yes,
and
to
so
me,
Shut Up and Dance, where it's like, okay, but those guys are pedophiles, like I don't really care what happens to them.
Yeah, see, to me it's not about
this one where it's like, what'd you say?
It's not about right or wrong, good or evil. Like what's interesting to me is the technology, and starting from a place of here's an idea that would be helpful to us. What happens to that in the hands of people and cultures that are imperfect? Like that's the struggle between those things is the interesting thing to me. And I think almost all of the episodes in this season deal with that in an interesting way.
Yeah. I don't think what we're entertained by is so different. I just think it loses some of its punch for me when there's not also this moral question.
Have you seen the final episode of the season yet?
I have not.
Okay. I'm curious as to what you'll think of that because I think that's an episode that removes a lot of the moral question entirely. Okay. It doesn't even really come up. So I'll be curious to see what you think about that next week. That'll be Hated in the Nation, episode 6. All right.
Hated in the Nation.
Hated in the Nation, yeah.
That sounds like a Public Enemy album or something.
It does. It actually surprised it hasn't been a Public Enemy album. it's a very un-Public Enemy episode, though, I think.
it was a hot collab between Luke and Chuck D in like 1996, right after Band in the USA. You know what I mean?
Are you a Trainspotting guy? Original Trainspotting.
I like Trainspotting. I wouldn't say I'm a Trainspotting guy. I've probably seen it twice.
That episode stars Kelly MacDonald, who you may remember as the kind of the hot chick in Trainspotting.
You're damn right, I remember.
Yeah. It was. I mean, she was in high school in the movie, but it was certainly a memorable. Memorable time.
I remember
screen.
Her from a lot of things.
Yeah,
she's in Harry Potter.
Yeah. Oh, she is. See, I didn't know that because I've never seen a Harry Potter.
And she's also she was in No Country for Old Men. I mean,
yeah, she's been in stuff.
She's an excellent actor.
Yeah. But it was somewhere in the middle of that, I was connecting like, oh, that's the Trainspotting.
Did you know there's a new Trainspotting coming out?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. I'm very, very aware of that.
Maybe Toy Department Revisits the Classics should tackle Trainspotting.
Do you want to do that? You want to do that this week? Or
let's give it some time. But I'm just saying, maybe when T2 Trainspotting comes out,
it's not going to be long, from what I hear. So, all right, we'll set that for a future day.
Oh yeah, look at that! It's expected to be released late January, early February.
Yeah, it's on the way.
Okay, yeah, maybe after New Year's, we'll go back and watch Trainspotting. Do you want to do? I know we said we were going to alternate movies and albums in the classics, but we could just go straight to Paul's Boutique while we're on the
let's do that.
Tip.
Let's do that.
All right, so we'll talk about the final Black Mirror and Paul's Boutique next week, among other things,
and some other stuff. All right, man. Until then.
Okay. Bye.
This game's in the Admiral refrigerator. The door is closed. The lights out. Butter's getting hard, the eggs are cooling, and the Jell-O is jiggling.
So long, everybody.
And do me a favor, have yourself a tremendous evening.